Hello, and welcome to the Sunlight Media Podcast. I'm your host, Angelo Frasina, founder and CEO of Sunlight Media. Today's guest is Al Smith from the ARS IP Law Firm.
Hey, Al, how's it going?
Good, man. How are you?
Doing very well. Thanks for joining us on the podcast today. Great to have you as a guest.
Thank you. Well, let me clarify, things are good considering the circumstances of 2020 between the pandemic, the coronavirus pandemic, and the police brutality and racism pandemic. It's been a lot going on, you know, but one day at a time.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely been an interesting year, and we're only halfway through it. So who knows what 2020 has install for us throughout the rest of the year, but hopefully it's a bit more positive than what it's been so far.
Absolutely.
So our connection, our personal connection, is through my attorney, Tristan Brown. So perhaps we can talk a little bit about how you and Tristan are connected.
Yeah, absolutely. So Tristan and I went to UCLA Law School together. We're in the same class. And we became close friends, and I actually managed his rap career during law school. That's a fun fact. Tristan, I'm not sure if he's doing music still, but at the time he had put out a mixtape, and our mutual friend Keith told me about it. I took a listen, and then we worked on a project together, and did a couple of shows. So yeah, it was really fun. And we remain friends now. We have a music group together that we formed. We talk about all things hip hop and music, and yeah, we've been good friends since law school. It's been over 10 years now.
That's awesome. That's great to connect with friends or remain, friends with old colleagues and school students and stuff like that. I still got friends that I keep in touch with from my high school days, which is amazing. So if you can keep friends for a long period of time like that, it's certainly a strong connection. So in terms of managing them, were you like an entertainment manager or a music manager for Tristan and his music projects back in the day?
Correct. I was a music manager, and I ran an entertainment website, and we were focused basically on music, and I think we were a little ahead of the curve. I was promoting Tristan kind of like Donald Glover, Childish Gambino, and that was during a time when folks were still listening to, 50 Cent was still popular, and that was like right when Kanye did that sales battle with 50, and right before Drake, and the culture started to shift towards more less hardcore rappers, and that's kind of what I was going for with Tristan, and we were a little ahead of the curve, but we should have stuck with it. In hindsight, I would have stuck with it a little longer,
Well, it's never too late, like they say, maybe you can dig up some of those old recordings and rehash them and put them out there. You just never know your luck.
Right.
Maybe that could be your next music project with Tristan. Let's go back over those old recordings and get them out there again.
Right. But yeah, I'm actually got back into music. I'm an entertainment lawyer now. I have 3 music clients currently, and it's been fun working with them.
Oh, cool. So are you a musician yourself? Do you sing or play an instrument, or you just have an interest in music and entertainment?
I do not play an instrument. I did play the piano for a year in high school and the saxophone for a year in elementary school, but I don't have any formal training. I do want to pick up an instrument in the near future, likely piano. But I'm just super passionate about music. curate playlists for fun, send them to my friends, and talk about all things music. It's just, you know, one of my favorite hobbies. And hopefully I can monetize it one day. But as of now, yeah, it's just something that I'm super passionate about and something I've been really into since I was a child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great industry. I mean, it's very challenging, as you know. It's extremely competitive and, you know, cutthroat. But it's a great thing, you know, being involved in the industry and learning an instrument and understanding the, you know, the theory and the concept behind music and notes and chord structure, and that it's a beautiful thing once you dive into it. And having the opportunity to play music with other people is also a great thing. And I'm very happy that I was able to do that for, I don't know, 20, 25 years. So it's awesome. It's awesome. It's a really good thing.
Wow, that's awesome. Where did you play?
I play drums. I still play, not professionally. I have a jazz fusion group called Funkyard. And we, you know, we kind of get together and write and record, you know, original compositions. We play out occasionally, although we haven't played out since March, obviously, because of COVID. But we play out generally, you know, once or twice a month, and we enjoy it. You know, it's a great outlet, gets me away from the computer and out of my regular, you know, day-to-day routines. And I have a small studio at home where I'm able to record, you know, my drum tracks, and we can rehearse here as well. So I'm still, you know, kind of involved in music, just not on a professional level, but I was for 22, 23 years, toured and traveled everywhere with, you know, a bunch of different groups here in the US and in Australia as well. So very fortunate to have experienced that, and I you know, still love the music and have a great passion for it.
That's awesome, man. Well, two of my clients are badass guitarists. One of them, his name is Jairus Mosey. He goes by J-Mo professionally. Jairus, J-Mo Mosey. J-Mo the Great is his Instagram tag. And the other guitarist is Cam Griffin. So his Instagram is just at Cam Griffin. And they're both doing great work. So yeah, it's pretty cool. And then my other client is an artist, just dropped the album. Her name is Ray Khalil. She was on the Netflix show Rhythm and Flow. Mm-hmm. And her album is really good, actually. It came out the other day. You should check that out as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to. You might have to connect me with some of these people. Maybe I can get them on as a guest, and we can talk about their music careers and the projects they've got going on and new albums and stuff. I'd love to do that.
Yeah, for sure.
So tell me how you got interested in law in the first place. You know, what got you interested in pursuing a legal career?
Sure. So I guess I'll start. I'm originally from Passaic, New Jersey, which is right outside of Newark. 10 miles from Times Square, New York City. Grew up in an inner city environment, public housing, public schools that, you know, were underfunded, under-resourced. But I was tracked early on into like gifted and talented classes and different programs. Through those programs, the counselors would always say, you need to take X, Y, and Z class to be a doctor or a lawyer. So these were kind of the tracks they were placing us on. And I knew I didn't want to be a doctor because I was always like horrified by blood. So I knew that wouldn't be my thing. So I had lawyer in the back of my mind. And I attended a historically black college. I attended Morehouse College in Atlanta. When I got there, the focus, Morehouse instills a commitment to service, to your community and to your people. So that's part of the reason I wanted to practice law as well, to kind of serve the people, give back. I was a big fan of like Johnny Cochran. Those were the main reasons that I wanted to get into law. And also, I managed some artists during college. And I saw that there were some entertainment executives who started their careers, who had went to law school and then became entertainment executives. So I just looked at it as a flexible degree. I wasn't sure if I wanted to go to, you know, the civil rights route or do entertainment, or, you know, what way I wanted to give back, but I knew it would be a powerful tool to give back to my community, you know, and make a good living.
Yeah, absolutely. That is a good cause. You know, it's a good reason to be involved in that type of thing. And I'm looking at your site now, and it looks like, you know, you do specialize in a few different aspects of law, but mostly intellectual property, it seems, a number of other things. You told me about, you know, your primary services that you do at the IRS law firm.
Yeah, so I started ARS IP law firm about 18 months ago. Prior to starting my firm, I was at a big law firm doing intellectual property litigation, and then I started doing more corporate work. So my focus is primarily intellectual property, but not necessarily, well, actually, let me take a step back. We're a full-service IP law firm. I recently brought on a patent attorney of counsel. Before I brought him on, I didn't handle anything related to patents. Most of my work was related to trademark and copyright law. So I filed copyrights, and I filed trademarks and do trademark litigation. My copyright law practice is primarily in the music business, so it's basically entertainment law.
Okay.
So other than the IP piece, I serve as in-house counsel to middle market companies, small to mid-sized companies. So I'm talking like between 1 and 50 million in annual revenue, and I service all their needs from their deal work, any transactions, to litigation. But I often partner with other attorneys. I put together teams to solve their problems. So that's pretty much my bread and butter, and that includes everything from startup through growing the business, capital raising, to potential exit, and protecting their IP throughout that process.
Great. Man, that sounds pretty interesting. Now, some of our listeners may not know the difference, so perhaps you can elaborate on the difference between trademark, copyright, and patent.
Absolutely. So a patent is for an invention. I guess I'll keep it there. I'll explain briefly and then maybe add some color. So trademarks cover your brand. For example, Nike or McDonald's or any big brand, they have a trademark in that name. They can have a trademark in the logo as well, so that an individual or company can't come into the market and use their name or a confusingly similar name and make money off of it. So that's kind of how you protect and grow your brand. And then a copyright is for written material. So a song, a movie, or TV script, or you can also copyright code. So yeah, those are the basic differences.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. I get a lot of, you know, a lot of my clients come to me with, you know, various ideas and concepts for, you know, a new website or a mobile app. And a lot of them think that they can get the app or the website patented, get a patent on the concept. Now, from my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, it seems that it's easier to get a patent on a piece of hardware than it is for software. Is that correct, or am I completely wrong?
No, you're not completely wrong. It is more difficult to patent software, especially if you're looking to patent like the method and use of a particular application, as opposed to what they say, like a new mousetrap or a novel way to use a physical tool.
Right.
So that's typically easier than, and then a lot of the software is open source. So you're building on top of stuff that's already out there. And
right.
So the protection that you get for it will be more limited. But it can get a little complicated, but you're not wrong.
Right. Yeah, I've had this conversation with, several clients in the past, and obviously I'm not an expert on, patents or IP law, so I can't really advise them as much, and I refer them to, attorneys and other experts. But could you give me an example as to when a particular piece of software may qualify for a patent? Or have you worked in a situation where you've been able to get a piece of software on a patent?
So again, to be clear, I work with an attorney who is a patent expert. He's a patent attorney who sat for the patent bar, and he does exclusively patent work. So he's the expert. I'm not the expert when it comes to patent law. But I do know, the basics, and I can kind of vet folks before sending them his way. But, Microsoft, a good tool is Google Patents. Google has how you can just Google information? Google has a patent database. If you go to, you type in Google Patents, it'll take you to the Google Patent database, and you can type in Microsoft, for example. And Microsoft has a bunch of software patents. Google has a bunch of software patents. Samsung, is that whole Google versus Samsung lawsuit. So those would all be examples of software patents.
Okay. Oh, that's interesting. So you're saying if anyone goes to Google and they search Google patent, they'd come to a site or a Google page that lists all the different patents that companies like Microsoft, Google, and Samsung currently hold?
All of and more. If you go to Google Patents, you can just type in any keywords and patents will come up for that particular. If you have an idea, you type it in Google Patents. Tell me an idea. Whatever you tell me, I can type it into Google Patents, and then there'll be a list of patents that are already out there on that particular subject.
Okay, well, that's interesting. I didn't know that was that easy to access that information, but that's a good resource for people to know. So I'll definitely keep that in mind next time I get someone with an idea they're looking to patent. I also noticed on your website. That you're working with social media influencers. Now, I know this is a relatively new market, so perhaps you can tell me a little bit about that and what you do in that particular field, and are any laws or new laws in place that protect influencers? What can you tell me about that particular marketing topic?
Sure. So I have a client who runs a marketing company, and she works with influencers directly. For example, for NBA All-Star Weekend, some of her clients did deals with like Kia, the car company. Kia paid their client X amount of dollars to do a few social media posts to promote their, I guess, their new car. And I put together the influencer agreement for that particular deal. It was actually a few influencer agreements that governs the arrangement that Kia has with the marketing company and a particular client. So it becomes very specific. They have to do three posts on this day, and then another follow-up post on this day, and you know, so everything is kind of spelled out. But it's definitely a growing industry. There's a book that I can recommend to folks who are looking to get more into the, you know, be an influencer or get into that business. The book is actually called Influencer.
Okay.
Let me get the woman's name. Her name is...
So the book is called Influencer, you said?
The book is called Influencer. And let me get the author's name.
So what are some of the laws and legalities that potential influencers should be aware of if they, you know, engage in a in promoting a brand or a company? Is there things that they need to be aware of or be careful with when they're, you know, promoting stuff on social media?
The agreements are pretty straightforward. So it just comes down to deliverables and the shooting schedule and the campaign details, making sure all those things are clear. Making sure the term, be wary of the term. If there's like flight information involved, making sure that's in place. Oh, exclusivity, that's a good one to look out for. If you're promoting one brand, you may not be able to promote their competitor.
Right.
You have to be careful with that in the agreement. Usage is an important piece of the agreement. How the company is able to use your content and how you're able to use it as well to promote yourself. That has to be spelled out in the agreement. Of course, the payment terms, travel and expenses should be covered if you have to go somewhere for the for the project. And then there's FTC rules and regulations. So the Federal Trade Commission have they're kind of like the ad police. So you usually have to hashtag ad when you do these posts. If you don't, make sure that the audience knows that you're doing a pay ad, then you can get in trouble for that. So those are the main things to worry about in that context.
That's good to know. But one thing that does confuse me is, why do you need to let your followers know that you're getting paid to promote something? Why is that a law? Why do people need to display that?
How do I explain?
Because it seems to me that, you know, if you want to post something, you should have the freedom to post it whether you're getting paid to or not, right? So why all of a sudden does the law change because someone's paying you to post something? it just seems kind of weird. I don't really understand why there's a law, but, you know, I thought maybe you can shed some light on it and tell me why they have, you know, placed a law, why there is a, you know, a law in place that, you know, says you need to tell people that you're getting paid to promote a particular product or brand.
Right. Let's come back to that question. Let me think about it for a second. Let me think about the best way to frame it.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, you can get back to me at a later time. That's not a problem. I just think that's interesting because, you know, there's this whole freedom of speech thing and, you know, social media should be an open, shared environment. And, you know, let's say you go out and you buy a pair of Nike shoes and you want to show them off, then sure, you can go ahead and show them off, right? You can say, hey, I just bought these new shoes. They're great. I love them. But if Nike's paying you to promote them, then all of a sudden you need to tell everyone that you're getting paid. I just don't quite understand that concept. And I'm sure there's a good reason behind it, but I just don't understand why there is a difference, you know?
It's just, it's basically comes down to deceptive advertising and just the advertising laws. So the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, doesn't want big companies using deceptive advertising and confusing the consumers. So they want you to let consumers know when you're selling them something, you know, as opposed to people posting something that they're interested in and they're not getting paid for. It's different than deceptive advertising.
Yeah, I guess it must be a complicated process for them to police, right? I mean, there's so many influencers out there that are promoting or just, you know, taking photos of them in clothes or a new pair of jeans or a skirt or shorts or whatever that they bought, maybe some new shoes, and they're not, you know, adding a note there that they got paid. So it's like, how do they go around policing it? I mean, it must be really challenging for, is it the FTC that polices this, you said?
Yeah. And yeah, they have guidelines on their website and other things. Yeah. So, and I'm sure they lay out the way that they police it. I mean, but like you said, it's likely very difficult to, but they have imposed tough penalties for companies that disguise advertising on Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok as reviews and things like that.
Yeah, it must be real challenging, especially considering the amount of people that use social media. I'd say it would be a tricky thing to do, but I'm sure they have a system in place. So another thing I noticed on the site is you assist businesses in raising capital. So, you know, what advice can you share to, you know, startups and entrepreneurs and individuals that are looking to raise capital for, you know, a new business or idea or new venture? What advice would you share and what road do you suggest they go down to raise capital?
Absolutely. So a business, you can scale a business in three ways you can raise money in the form of equity, giving folks equity, ownership interest in your business. You can take on debt, like a bank loan or a loan from the SBA, for example, or you can have a business that's generating revenue right away and you're supporting your business with new customers constantly. In the tech space, folks raise money from venture capital firms, angel investors, things of that nature. Those companies are typically structured as a Delaware corporation, and in this climate, folks are starting out with either convertible notes or SAFE agreements, which is stands for a simple agreement for future equity. So you can raise $1 million or $2 million on a safe agreement or a convertible note, which will provide you enough runway for 18 to 24 months. So those are typically the magic numbers. Folks are raising money to get them to the next level in 18 months or 24 months. And then after that, they can do what you call a priced round, where you raise more capital, and the equity that you, well, the note or the safe converts to equity, and you typically raise more money in that second round. But just, if you're starting out raising money and giving equity, you would likely use a safe or a convertible note. You can also, I mean, if your business is not a high growth startup in that way, you can apply for a bank loan or SBA loan, or have a revenue generating business and pick up a few contracts, a few clients that you're providing a service to and make money in that way. So those are the typical ways to raise money and scale a company.
So how would you advise an individual to do that? Sorry, yeah, I was just going to ask, how does someone figure out which avenue is going to be best for them? You know, they've got this new idea or this new concept. How do they decide what type of capital they need to raise, and how do they go about getting that? Is there, you know, should they approach an attorney like yourself or use an online portal? What's the best route they should go?
So again, it's case by case, but if you're building a business that you want to be national and international, or you're building the next Facebook or Instagram or Zoom or a high growth startup in that way, the process is pretty straightforward, and it's vanilla. It's the same process. You form a Delaware corporation. Investors will be looking at how strong your team is and what problem you're solving, and whether there's potential for the company to own IP. So if it's an invention, a novel way to use a method and process, then you can potentially have future patent applications. Like Google owns so many patents. If you look in the Google patent database, or Microsoft, or Facebook, you can look at the number of patents that these folks are filing is tremendous. And then if you're a high growth startup and you're gonna own tons of IP and create value, your platform, then yeah, and you're solving a problem, you're gonna want VC money. And you can get lists of VCs from like TechCrunch and other platforms, and it's a lot. You have to put together a deck, and you have to do a ton of pitches, and or you may be accepted into an accelerator, like Y Combinator is one of the biggest accelerators out there, and TechStars. There's a bunch of other accelerators in Los Angeles. Mucker Labs is a big one. So there are various routes to go about it. But if you're a high growth startup, then you're typically going to take on VC money. And then your first price round, you're likely going to give up 20% of your company for X millions of dollars, and keep plugging away in that regard. But yeah, it'll be angel investors. There's like AngelList, I believe. There's tons of lists out there of VCs and angel investors, and a lot of them invest in different industries. They all serve different verticals, so you just have to find the investors who are focused on your particular startup. Like, there's some investors who won't invest in gambling or anything related to alcohol or cannabis or things like that. But then there are groups of investors who do invest in those types of businesses. So you just have to do a ton of research and find those folks.
I see.
I think, let me see, AngelList. Yeah, AngelList is one where you can find. Yeah, AngelList allows you to invest in startups. So. I'll send you a couple of other resources for angel investors and VCs.
Yeah, that'd be great. You know, I sometimes do get asked, you know, by potential clients if they know of it, if I know of any investors or platforms they can look into to, you know, raise capital. So, yeah, some resources would be great. I'd love to share those with everyone. You also mentioned the SBA loans, and I know the SBA has created a couple of new loans for the, you know, the COVID situation. Maybe we can talk a little bit about that, because I'm sure that there are many businesses that are struggling because of COVID and don't realize that there's lots of options open for them. So what does the SBA currently have, and is there anything in the future in the pipeline that they're also working on?
Yeah, absolutely. So the government has been kind to me during COVID in that regard. So I applied for an SBA disaster relief loan, and I obtained that loan. And then I also got the PPP loan, which is the Payroll Protection Program. And that loan is actually forgivable as long as you use the funds on payroll and rent and a couple of other items, but mainly payroll and rent. So I was able to, not let go of my assistant, and now have some law clerks and things like that. It's mainly for folks to continue to pay their staffs. And it's really free money. You know, if you can show that you used it for only payroll, then the loan is forgivable. So, I would definitely encourage folks. But the difference is the PPP loans are administered through banks. You apply through a local bank, and the disaster relief loan comes directly from the SBA. But yeah, all of that information is online on the SBA site, or you can check in with a local bank. I used California Bank and Trust to get my PPP loan.
Okay, that's great.
I think Tristan got the PPP loan through Chase. I'm not sure.
Okay. So it sounds like there's plenty of options. People just need to either go to the SBA.gov website or go to their regular banking website and try and find some information where they can actually apply for the loan. And from what I understand is if you can't get the entire loan erased or have the SBA forgive the loan, then there is options to pay it back at a later date. From what I understand, some of these loans, you don't have to start paying back for, like, you know, maybe another 6 or 12 months. Is that correct?
Well, the SBA loan, you have to pay that back. And, yeah, you don't have to pay it back right away. And it's also like a 30-year loan. So the terms are very favorable. But the PPP loan, that's the one that's forgivable. That's forgivable if you show that you used the loan for payroll and rent and a few other expenses.
That's good to know. Yeah, people should take advantage of that, especially if they're trying to protect jobs and keep their staff working. They should definitely look at the PPP loan with the SBA. That's a great thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to hold you up too much longer. I know you're a busy man. You've got limited availability. I do know we're meant to go through your website today and talk a little bit about SEO and stuff, but maybe we can do that at a later date or through email at some point. But I also want to mention that our listeners are, you know, seeking some legal advice in IP law and any of the other topics that we discussed today. They should look Al up through his website, which is arscouncil.com. I believe you're on social media as well, so you can search ARS IP Law Firm. Where are you at? You're on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, I see. Is that correct?
Correct. It's at ARS Council on Instagram, and my personal Instagram is at Almuesq, Almuesq.
Cool. Awesome. All right,
Al. Council is like legal counsel.
Legal counsel.
Legal counsel. So it's spelled COUNSEL, ARS Council.
Got it. Oh, maybe they should just start at your website and go from there, arscouncil.com. There's a lot of great information, resources, news, and blogs. So I think, you know, people should check that out and definitely reach out to Al if they've got questions or need some advice on anything legal. It's been great having you on the podcast today. Thanks again for joining us. Hopefully we can do it again maybe post-COVID and talk about some other things and changes that are available in IP law and loans and all that stuff. But yeah, thanks again. It's been great.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate you.
No problem, Al. You enjoy the rest of your afternoon and have a great weekend.
All right. You too. Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.